Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This article is entitled, A Taste of West Texas Living. Local cowboys, cowgirls, to show off their skills at county show. Story and photos by Morgan Taylor Thomas, staff writer. Every January, Midland County 4-H and FFA students load up their trailers and head to the Horseshoe to compete in the Midland County Livestock Association's four-day show. From wide-eyed cows and pretty pink piggies to cozy rabbits and rambunctious goats, the annual showcase flaunts hard work and West Texas living. Yet the competition doesn't reign as MCLA's main purpose. As a nonprofit, the crew prides itself on being able to give back to area students. Laura Robinette, a media spokesperson for MCLA, spoke with the Reporter Telegram about the organization's mission in supporting local students. All the money we raise at our premium sale Saturday goes back to the kids for the projects for the following year. For our graduating seniors, this money helps them pay for college or whatever their next step is after high school. While some cowgirls and cowboys may take their lot down the road to Austin, San Antonio, or Houston to compete in majors, a lot of them consider the livestock show as their biggest event, making the money raised even more important. With a limit of 6 animals per species, cattle, poultry, pig, rabbit, lamb, and goat, many students spend all day at the Horseshoe, warming up, walking, prepping, and taking care of their four-legged friends. Some of them started getting their animals way back in March, so this is time to shine and put all that hard work to good use, Robinette said. If you need any other reason to support our local hardworking youngsters, visit facebook.com/MCLATX. The schedule. Wednesday, 5 p.m., Heifer Show, followed by Steer Show. Thursday, 10 a.m., Poultry Show, followed by Rabbit Show, Peewee Rabbit Show. 5 p.m., Gilt Show. Friday, 2 p.m., Market Goat Show, followed by Breeding Goat Show, Market Lamb Show. Saturday, 10 a.m., Judging of Culinary Arts. That's right, these kids can also bake. 12 p.m., Champion Club Luncheon. 2 p.m., Welcome to Sale. To 10 p.m., Premium Action Sale and Awards.
Bennett Service scheduled for Saturday. A memorial service for longtime Odessan Ronald Bennett is scheduled at 2 p.m. Saturday at Connection Christian Church, 4241 Tanglewood Lane in Odessa. Bennett was 88 and was a fixture on Odessa's art scene for more than six decades. He was a local piano teacher extraordinaire, teaching thousands during his years beside the piano. In 2019, he was honored with Friends of the Arts Award during the Black and White Ball. At the time, he told the audience, after a standing ovation, that if you give to Odessa, it will give back to you. That was Ronald Bennett. He was always working to improve Odessa and the talents of young musicians. He didn't care who got the credit for doing great things, as long as great things were done. During that 2019 ball, he was called a founding father of the arts in Odessa. His passion for the arts led him to have a hand in most all things art in Odessa for 60-plus years, including the Permian Playhouse, the Odessa Music Teachers Association, the Globe Theater, the Cultural Council, and many others. Bennett told the audience that day he was humbled by this wonderful thing. Bennett was a Jonesboro, Arkansas native who came to Odessa in 1959 after earning bachelor's and master's degrees at the Cincinnati Conservatory of Music, and his teaching career has now reached the third generations of some families. He was choir director at the First Christian Church, now Connection Church, and at St. Luke's United Methodist and Westminster Presbyterian churches. Bennett wrote numerous pieces for local school choirs and 50 exercises to teach various techniques that are nationally published. Odessa Chamber of Commerce CEO and President Renee Earls said he was a joy to know. He shined a light on the arts and culture in our community for many decades. I can't even begin to imagine the number of students, young and old, he impacted over the many years, providing voice and piano lessons and lending his talent to many events and organizations. BCCO celebrating 25 years. Organization continues to educate and share Black history. Before becoming an attorney and opening his practice, Gavin Norris was already considered a rising star. During the annual Evening with the Stars event in 2003, the Black Cultural Council of Odessa recognized Norris and other students for their academic excellence, awarding them scholarships. After graduating from the University of Texas Permian Basin with an undergraduate degree in political science and government, Norris got his law degree from Texas Southern University's Thurgood Marshall School of Law. Before leaving for law school, Norris recalled how Joanne Davenport Littleton and members of the Black Cultural Council of Odessa, which he has been involved with for as long as he can remember, threw him a party and raised funds, helping him pay for his first year's tuition. "That was something that made a difference," Norris said. "The scholarship for first-generation students who would not otherwise be able to go to school is one of the most important things that can happen. It's also comforting knowing that you have the community's support behind you." With a mission of educating and sharing Black history with the community, the Black Cultural Council of Odessa is celebrating 25 years of operating in Odessa. In addition to Evening with the Stars, the organization hosts two other major events: the annual Martin Luther King Jr. Day Breakfast and Freedom March, and the annual Juneteenth celebration. Both events, Littleton said, continue to see growth. "Our MLK event this year is very diverse," she said. "We have so many young people that want to be a part of it and spread that message of togetherness, and that's what it's all about." Stepping up when needed. In 1999, Littleton was approached by then executive director of the Odessa Council for the Arts and Humanities, Carla Bryant, to let her know the Arts Council, which then hosted the annual Juneteenth celebration, would no longer be doing so. A member of the Odessa City Council from 1990 to 1998, Littleton said, "Juneteenth is too critical of an event not to host. The day celebrates June 19, 1865, when the announcement of General Order No. 3, which transmitted news of the Emancipation Proclamation, was made in Galveston, proclaiming the end of slavery in Texas. Juneteenth was made a federal holiday on June 17, 2021. As the largest organized Juneteenth in Texas, Odessa hosts a 3 or 4 day celebration that includes live music, games, dancing, and an organized basketball tournament, which also sharing the holiday's history. People from around the country visit Odessa to participate," Littleton said. Reaching out to community members, Littleton said the group hosted the event and took steps to ensure there would always be a way to celebrate. "Being a community with a rich history, there was no way we could not have a Juneteenth celebration," Littleton said. To prevent that from happening again, we met, organized, incorporated, got bylaws, and that was the start of it. The Council's Martin Luther King Jr. celebration will begin with the 5th annual MLK Showcase Basketball Tournament on Saturday. A gospel celebration is scheduled to start at 3 p.m. January the 14th at the Odessa High School Performing Arts Center. The King Brunch is scheduled from 10 a.m. to noon on January the 15th at Woodson Community Center, followed by the Freedom March at 1 p.m., starting at the Southside Senior Center. Putting on the events, Littleton said, can be challenging. As a nonprofit, the council relies on funds from supporters, sponsors, and the Community Development Block Grant issued by the Odessa City Council. The budget fluctuates, but that has never been a reason to cancel. They do a lot of good for our community, and they have done so much through their 25 years, said former District 5 Odessa Councilwoman Marvie Spivey Willis. They do an extraordinary amount of work with very few people, sometimes little money, but they involve the whole community, and that takes some engineering to do, and they do it well. Supporting the community. More than 20 years after receiving a star during the Evening with the Stars banquet, Norris said his award is prominently displayed to remind him of his upbringing and the people who encouraged him. For many first-generation college students, the event is sometimes the first recognition of their academic achievements. It was a big deal, Norris said, who continues to volunteer time and donate monetarily. As one of the few African Americans to go to law school, I don't mind giving back because they have given so much. The American Bar Association states only 5% of lawyers in the United States identify as black. In their existence, the council has had people who have been vocal about its existence. But Willis said people of all races are welcome to events, and members have always been open about sharing history with others. Someone in the community will say the events are just about black history, but we're a melting pot, and everybody's history is intertwined, Willis said. To see Hispanics and Anglos coming out to help us and celebrate, we embrace it. I encourage people to get involved, no matter who you are. The council has also, for the first time in its history, an official office in the Gertrude Bruce Historical Cultural Center. With ups and downs over the past 25 years, Littleton said the council will continue to host their events and look forward to seeing more people come out and celebrate. When you have community pride, that's all it takes, she said. And over 25 years, we have a large volunteer base of people that believe in this community. When you work together, that makes a difference. Civics B entry deadline coming up. Middle school students from across Ector County are invited to participate in the Civics B, being organized by the Odessa Chamber of Commerce. Cash prizes of $500 for first place, $250 for second place, and $125 for third place are available locally. The state prize for first place is $1,000, second place is $500, and third place is $250. The local B will be held April the 6th at the University of Texas Permian Basin and moderated by Pat Canty, Regional Vice President, publisher of the Odessa American, who did the honors last year. Odessa Chamber President and CEO Renee Earls said the Abel Hanger Foundation is sponsoring the Bee. They are hoping it will incentivize teachers to encourage students to apply. Last year we got applicants, but we didn't get any from ECISD, so we thought we need to do something to incentivize the teachers, because I think if the student or parent sees that they're going to encourage their student to apply, it doesn't take long to get to a 500-word essay, Earle said. She added that right now, more than ever, we need to be aware of the importance of civics and the role it plays in our past and future. It's a pretty amazing program, Earle said. The deadline to submit essays is January the 22nd. Everything is submitted electronically. However, if a student can't do that, they can submit a hard copy, postmarked by January the 22nd, to the Odessa Chamber of Commerce, 700 North Grant Avenue, Suite 200, Odessa, Texas, 79761. The essay should include, what is the problem and how do different members in your community or neighborhood view it? What civic principles or systems could help address the problem? What is your idea or recommendation for solving the problem? What primary sources, such as the Declaration of Independence or the U.S. Constitution, provide supporting evidence or examples for your idea or recommendation? How might members of your community or neighborhood bring your idea or recommendation to life? Essays will be evaluated based on how well you demonstrate an understanding of civics, acknowledge and address opposing points of view, use primary sources, and clearly describe an idea innovative or new to you. The first part of the B is the civics test. There are two rounds of that before they enter a live round, which includes questions from the judges where students are asked about their essays, what they wrote about, why they wrote about it, and why they chose their particular topics, Earle said. The judges ask them questions back and forth. Then the judges go back and grade each student. The top three winners get to go to the State B, which last year was held in Dallas in August, she added. Executive Director of the Education Partnership of the Permian Basin, Adrian Vega, was a judge last year. Vega said he was proud to serve in the role and thought it was a neat community event. For the chamber to be able to host a Civics Bee, that's a pretty cool opportunity for middle school students to learn more about civics, local government, state-level government, and U.S. government, and how it all works. The sooner a young man or woman can be engaged in that, from my perspective, I think the more likely they will grow a greater sense of awareness of how things work to get more involved and active as they continue to grow, Vega said. Earls doesn't know yet where or when the State Bee will be this year, but the winner of the Texas Bee will go to the National Bee. In the local news roundup, officials, wrong-way driver hits two troopers. A 35-year-old Seminole man is facing several felony charges after DPS troopers said he ran into two of them while trying to avoid a DWI arrest, all while his 9-year-old daughter was traveling with him. According to a Texas Department of Public Safety report, a Midland trooper pulled Michael Joe Estrada over for driving west in an eastbound lane of Highway 191 near mile marker 268 around 3 a.m. on Saturday. When the trooper instructed Estrada to stay put, Estrada instead drove toward her and trapped her in between her open door and the inside of her patrol unit, the report stated. Estrada continued going the wrong way, and he hit another trooper's vehicle head-on near Faudry Road and 191, rendering both vehicles inoperable and Estrada unconscious, the report stated. According to the report, Estrada's daughter got out of the vehicle and ran to troopers because she was scared, and once at the hospital, she told them she was upset with her dad for being drunk and crashing again. Estrada, whose eyes were bloodshot and glassy and who smelled of alcohol, insisted he was in San Angelo and had no concept of the time, the report stated. Estrada admitted to drinking alcohol that night but refused to provide a blood sample. According to the report, troopers obtained a search warrant for his blood, but skipped having Estrada performed field sobriety test due to his being knocked out during the crash. A trooper noted in his report Estrada had been convicted of driving while intoxicated twice before and of evading police in a vehicle once before. Estrada was arrested on suspicion of child endangerment, evading police in a vehicle, aggravated assault against a public servant, and DWI third or more. He remained in the Ector County Jail Monday night on surety bonds totaling $175,000. Roommate argument leads to arrest. An argument between three roommates Saturday afternoon led to the arrest of one of them on three felony charges. According to an Odessa Police Department report, officers received a disturbance call from the 9200 block of Holiday Drive around 3 p.m. on Saturday. When they arrived, two residents told the officers they wanted Cody Parks Frazier to leave the apartment the three of them shared, and during the ensuing argument, Frazier got punched in the face in self-defense. The roommates said Frazier then pulled a gun on them, the report stated. When one of the roommates grabbed a baseball bat, they said Frazier threw the gun at them and one of them locked it up in a boat on the driveway. The roommates said Frazier took the bat away from the one wielding it and used it to strike the other one, the report stated. Officers took possession of the 9mm handgun and Frazier, who was inside the residence, the report stated. Frazier was arrested on suspicion of two counts of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon and unlawful possession of a firearm by a felon. He remained in the Ector County Jail Monday night on surety bonds totaling $65,000. Midland settles with company to drill wastewater wells near drinking water supply. City leaders fought a year-long battle to keep a company from drilling wastewater disposal wells too close to their drinking water. This week, they settled with the company instead in a decision they say was a last resort. Pilot Water Solutions, a Houston-based company, is planning to build 9 disposal wells to store salt water that surfaces to the ground during crude oil extraction, a waste byproduct known as produced water. The company hoped to install these wells near T-Bar Ranch, an underground water reservoir from which the city gets a third of its drinking water for more than 132,000 residents. Maybe we shouldn't say this is the safest saltwater disposal system in the country, but it's safer now because of what we did, said Midland City Council member Scott Dufford, referring to the settlement. In 2022, Midland awarded Pilot licenses that authorized the company to transport produced water to land neighboring T-Bar Ranch. City leaders say they didn't know Pilot was planning to submit applications with the Railroad Commission of Texas to drill 18 disposable wells in the vicinity of the groundwater. We asked them if they planned to apply, and Pilot said no, said Carl Crago, director of utilities for the City of Midland. Shortly after the city granted the licenses, Pilot began to drill 4 wells inland close to T-Bar Ranch. Pilot did not respond to requests for comment. The city challenged the applications and asked the Railroad Commission, which regulates the oil and gas industry in the state, for a hearing. In a plea to the commissioners, Midland Mayor Lori Blong argued the proposed location of the wells was in dangerous proximity to the city's drinking water. The Railroad Commission eventually agreed to a hearing, which was scheduled for this month. But days before the hearing, city officials negotiated directly with the company, eliminating the Railroad Commission as an intermediary, and reached a settlement that would pay the city $400,000 annually, plus $4.5 million every 10 years, based on the amount of produced water Pilot injects into the wells. City officials say they will use that money to fund new water infrastructure projects. Pilot agreed to some concessions, including bringing down the number of saltwater disposal wells from 18 to 9, installing and financing monitoring systems that would detect any chemicals in the drinking water, and agreeing to give the city unlimited access to the tools monitoring the flow of water underground. The company also agreed to plug 2 abandoned saltwater disposal wells in T-Bar Ranch. City officials said the settlement they reached with Pilot was the best-case scenario given the circumstances. They argued that following through with the Railroad Commission hearing would have prolonged the dispute and that the commissioner's ruling would not have guaranteed the concessions they obtained through the settlement. Initially, local officials told state regulators that the city should be able to contest Pilot's applications given how close the wells would be to Midland's drinking water supply. That changed with the settlement. Now, they say, the reduced capacity of the wells, half of the amount originally proposed, would not pose a dire risk of contamination for the groundwater. Pilot also agreed to drill the 9 wells further away from the drinking water. Pilot's proposed underground storage units will reach 7,500 feet in depth. The groundwater is 600 feet below the ground. City officials said they would shut down both the drinking water and saltwater disposal wells if the monitoring systems detected contamination. If there is even an inkling of an issue, we'll find out about it because all the safeguards are in place, Dufford said. But it would be very hard for the produced water to get from the western side of the ranch, where there is no reservoir, to our reservoir. Virginia Palacios, executive director of Commission Shift, an environmental watchdog group, said that regardless of the concessions reached through the settlement agreement, the saltwater disposal wells could continue to pose a risk for Midland. I think in the greater context, we're seeing a lot of problems with these underground injection wells. It seems like something that's not safe to do so close to the water supply. Quick hits. The last day to register to vote in the March primary is Monday, February the 5th. The first day of early voting is Tuesday, February the 20th, and the last day to apply to vote by mail is February the 23rd. The final day of early voting is March 1st, and Election Day is March 6th in Texas. Questions? Visit tinyurl.com/24xacbvs. Caring for youth. Educators, clergy, parents, therapists, and all who work with kids are encouraged to participate in Blessed Youth, Caring for Youth Mental Health in the Permian Basin, 10 a.m. to 12:30 p.m., January the 16th, at the Wagner Noel Rhea Great House Room. Tickets are available at tinyurl.com/3ahu77hb for $15. For questions or additional information, please contact Pastor Dawn Weeks at Connection Christian Church at 432-332-2954. How are the children? This is the question mental health advocate Reverend Dr. Sarah Lund compels us to ask our community, Weeks said in an email. Her recent book, Blessed Youth, Breaking the Silence About Mental Illness in Children and Teens, has impacted thousands, Weeks wrote. An ecumenical coalition of local churches invites you to hear Dr. Lund speak, answer questions, and lead discussion in small groups at a hearty luncheon. MLK Celebration. The Black Cultural Council of Odessa has scheduled a number of events to celebrate MLK Day. A basketball tourney is scheduled 6 p.m. January 12th, and all day January 13th at Woodson Boys and Girls Club. a gospel celebration featuring the Reverend Reginald G. Reed of Pleasant Hills Baptist Church in Shreveport, Louisiana, is scheduled at 3 p.m. at the OHS Performing Arts Center, 1301 Dots Avenue. Gospel artist Joshua Rogers will perform. The King Brunch is scheduled at 10 a.m. to noon, January the 15th at the Woodson Community Center in Woodson Park, followed by the Freedom March, which begins at the Southside Senior Citizens Center at noon. The march begins at 1 p.m. A candlelight vigil is also scheduled by the Delta Sigma Theta sorority at Woodson Park on January the 15th. Mental Health Support. Fresh Hope Mental Support Group meet on the first and third Mondays of each month at 6:30 p.m. at Tanglewood Baptist Church, 3737 Tanglewood Lane. The groups are peer-led for those with a diagnosis and for their loved ones. Call 432-638-1847 for more information. Civils is PBPA's newest top hand. Pioneer Odessa industrialist C. Richard Dick Savalls will receive his second major award in 3 months when he is designated the Permian Basin's Petroleum Association's top hand at a January 18th reception and banquet at the Petroleum Club in Midland. In October, Civils was named the Permian Basin International Oil Show's honoree. The Top Hand Award is the highest award bestowed by PBPA members and one of the highest honors given to an energy professional in the Permian Basin, a PBPA spokesman said. Being a top hand means you exemplify all the best qualities of professional and community service. Civils is president and CEO of Civils, Inc., where he worked since 1958, and he remains active in the company's day-to-day operations, designing, manufacturing, and selling process equipment for the oil, gas, and petrochemical industries. He is also president of Textrol and Control Ventures. Civils, age 89, is a native of Oklahoma City who served 2 years in the U.S. Army Signal Corps, reaching the rank of sergeant, and he graduated with distinction from the University of Oklahoma. He is a licensed professional engineer and member of the National Society of Professional Engineers, who has written over 40 technical articles and papers on oil and gas production and processing equipment design. Civils has taught courses in engineering and gas processing and oil treating at Texas Tech University, the University of Oklahoma, and Texas A&M University, and he is a member of the Distinguished Graduate Society of the College of Engineering at the University of Oklahoma. Throughout his illustrious career, Dick has been incredibly active in many oil and gas trade associations, and he is past chairman of the PBPA, a PBA spokesman said, adding that Civils' community service as an Odessa City Councilman and Mayor Pro Tem and as a member of the Permian Basin Regional Planning Commission and Permian Basin International Oil Show is a major reason why he is the latest top hand. This day in history. Today's highlight in history is on January the 10th, 1776. Thomas Paine anonymously published his influential pamphlet, Common Sense, which argued for American independence from British rule. And in 1860, the Pemberton Mill in Lawrence, Massachusetts, collapsed and caught fire, killing up to 145 people, mostly female workers from Scotland and Ireland. In 1861, Florida became the third state to secede from the Union. In 1863, the London Underground had its beginnings as the Metropolitan, the world's first underground passenger railway, opened to the public with service between Paddington and Farringdon Street. In 1870, John D. Rockefeller incorporated Standard Oil. In 1920, the League of Nations was established as the Treaty of Versailles went into effect. In 1967, President Lyndon B. Johnson, in his State of the Union address, asked Congress to impose a surcharge on both corporate and individual income taxes to help pay for his Great Society programs, as well as the war in Vietnam. In 1971, French fashion designer Coco Chanel died in Paris at age 87. In 1984, the United States and the Vatican established full diplomatic relations for the first time in more than a century. In 2002, Marines began flying hundreds of Al-Qaeda prisoners in Afghanistan to a U.S. base at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. In 2003, North Korea withdrew from a global treaty barring it from making nuclear weapons. In 2007, the Democratic-controlled House voted 315 to 116 to increase the federal minimum wage to $7.25 an hour. In 2011, a judge in Austin, Texas, ordered former U.S. House Majority Leader Tom DeLay to serve 3 years in prison for his money laundering conviction. DeLay's conviction was ultimately overturned. And in 2022, Robert Durst, the New York real estate heir who was sentenced to life in prison for killing his best friend, died at age 78 at a hospital outside of the California prison where he'd been serving his sentence. How to Avoid the Medicare Part D Penalty by Tony King. Hello, Tony. I read your article about how ignoring Medicare rules is costing Americans millions. And I believe I have made a mistake because I have not enrolled in a Medicare Part D prescription drug plan. I need your help. I retired in August and had a telemarketing agent help me find a Medicare supplement, which began September the 1st. No one told me that I had a specific amount of time to enroll in my Medicare Part D plan. Currently, my prescriptions are generic, and I use GoodRx to receive the discount. When I enrolled on December the 15th for a new Medicare Part D plan, I was denied because I did not apply on time. I am 70, and my Part D will begin next year when I'm 71. Medicare informed me that the Part D penalty will be 34.70 cents times 72 months since my Medicare Part A began 6 years ago at 65. I cannot believe that I must pay an extra $25 per month as a Part D penalty. Please explain this ridiculous Medicare Part D rule and when I can begin my plan. Thank you. Signed, Samuel from Chattanooga, Tennessee. Dear Samuel, you will have to wait until the next Medicare annual enrollment period from October the 15th to December the 7th to enroll in a Medicare Part D plan. Your effective date will be January the 1st, 2025. The good news is that you are currently taking generics and can use GoodRx, which is not what Medicare deems as a credible prescription drug plan, until you enroll in Medicare Part D during that time. Chapter 5 of the Tony Says Medicare Survival Guide Advanced Edition explains Medicare Part D, how to avoid Part D penalties, and the famous donut hole. Once you are past 65 and leaving credible employers group coverage with a prescription drug plan, Medicare gives you only 63 days, not 90 days, not 8 months, but less than 63 days to enroll in Medicare Part D or a Medicare Advantage plan with prescription drug coverage. Your late enrollment period, LEP, did not begin from the day you left your company health plan, nor from your Medicare Part B start date. It began from the month your Medicare Part A began. The late enrollment period penalty for Medicare Part D can be charged to you because, one, you waited past 63 days without credible prescription drug coverage upon leaving company benefits, and you are older than 65 years and 90 days. Readers, do not wait past 63 days to get Medicare Part D upon leaving company health insurance. Samuel, this is your situation. Second, your company prescription drug benefits, not health insurance, were not credible as Medicare declares. And thirdly, you never enrolled in Medicare Part D at the time you enrolled in Medicare Part A and Part B when you turned 65, and now you want to enroll. Samuel, you were denied Medicare Part D prescription coverage because you met Medicare's late enrollment penalty rule and will receive the Part D penalty when you enroll during Medicare's annual enrollment period, a penalty which lasts a lifetime. Americans retiring after 65 who are leaving employers' health plans and applying for Medicare Parts A and B must also prove they have credible coverage when applying for a Medicare Part D prescription drug plan. This is a Medicare rule. Don't delay your Medicare Part D enrollment. Is the maze of Medicare confusing you? Contact the Tony Says Medicare team at 832-519-8664 or info@tonisays.com with your Medicare questions. Tony King's Medicare Survival Guide Advanced Edition and the new Confused About Medicare video series is on sale at TonySays.com. Town Hall set on emergency use districts. Getting a discussion going on emergency service districts is the goal of a town hall meeting set for 6:30 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. January the 12th at Buddy West Elementary School, 2225 Sycamore Drive. Emergency use districts are exclusively for fire, EMS, or both, County Judge Dustin Fawcett said. It has a cap on the property tax rate of 10 cents per $100 valuation, so it has some metrics there to allow folks to feel a little bit more comfortable with exclusively providing these certain services, Fawcett said. I think it's a worthy discussion to at least get folks talking about it. Whether or not this is the actual route the citizens in unincorporated Ector County go, that's not our goal. It's up to them, but I want to provide them certain resources. Safe D Executive Director Cliff Avery will be on hand to take questions. Safe D is the Texas State Association of Fire and Emergency Districts. Fawcett said Avery will be able to talk people through emergency use districts. Commissioner Precinct 1 Mike Gardner will also be there. My goal is over this next year is to have a series of town halls throughout all of Ector County and talk about these different concepts of what incorporation is or what emergency service districts are. That way, the citizens know what options they have for a version of self-governance to some aspect, Fawcett said. There was a meeting last year in West Odessa on self-governance that Fawcett said started off hostile, but after the hour and a half meeting, people were laughing and smiling and complimented what the county was talking about. We planted a seed that I think has taken on a good life. people are interested in the concept. The first 30 minutes was really pushing back over the thought that they were going to be annexed by the city of Odessa. That was the reason for their hostility. It was not that they were against this concept. They were actually quite in favor. I bet if we had taken a poll at that time, it would have passed from those people that were there. They were all nodding and agreeing that emergency services should be prioritized, Fawcett said. Obituaries. Wyona M. Green passed away at home on Friday, January the 5th. A service will be held at 3 p.m. Friday, January the 12th, in the chapel at Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home in her honor. Herbert Johnson passed away on January the 3rd in Odessa at the age of 97. Family and friends will gather to celebrate Herbert's life at 10 o'clock Friday, January the 12th, at First Baptist Church in Odessa, with graveside services immediately following at Sunset Memorial Cemetery. Family visitation will be Thursday, January the 11th, 6 to 8 p.m. at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Laverne Couch passed away peacefully on January the 8th. Services will be Saturday at 2 p.m. at the West University Church of Christ. Michael David Martin passed away on January the 3rd. Devon Tristan Carson, age 18, of Odessa, died Friday, January the 5th. A celebration of life will be held at 2 p.m. to 6 p.m. January the 10th at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Benito Chavez Sr., age 63, of Odessa, died Wednesday, January the 3rd. No services have been scheduled, but arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Maria Gonzalez, age 99, of Odessa, died Saturday, January the 5th. A celebration of life will be held at 10 a.m. January the 11th at the American Heritage Funeral Home. Thelma Hudson, age 84, passed away on January the 5th. Visitation will be on Wednesday, January the 10th from 6 to 8 p.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home. Funeral service and burial are scheduled for Thursday, January the 11th at 2 p.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home and Cemetery, located at 4100 North FM 1788 in Midland. Gorgana Deborah King Irwin, age 69, of Odessa, died Friday, January the 5th. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Angelina Levine, age 91, of Kyle, Texas, died Sunday, January the 7th. Funeral service will be held at 3 p.m. January the 10th at the Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Virginia Larkin, age 79, of Odessa, died Sunday, December the 24th in Midland. Memorial service will be held at 11 a.m. on Saturday, January the 13th at the Eternity Funeral Home Chapel. James Michael Peak II, age 57, died Saturday, January the 6th in Midland. Services are pending with American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Fernando Rafael Solis, age 25, of Odessa, died Friday, January the 5th. Funeral service will be held at 2 p.m. January the 10th at the American Heritage Funeral Home. Alvin Wilson, age 89, of Odessa, died Monday, January the 8th. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. on January the 13th, First United Pentecostal Church. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Robert Bob Spears, age 89, passed peacefully away in Marble Falls, Texas.
This is Reed, and this is the Midland Reporter Telegram Health and Wellness for Wednesday, January 10th, 2024. DAISY Lifetime Achievement Award. Dr. Michael Hall receives DAISY Lifetime Achievement Award. Midland Health is thrilled to announce that Dr. Michael Hall, DNP, RN, CMNL, has been honored with the esteemed DAISY Lifetime Achievement Award for 2023. This prestigious award is reserved for nurses who have dedicated their lives to providing compassionate care, serving as beacons of inspiration for all in the nursing profession. The honorees of the DAISY Lifetime Achievement Award demonstrate exceptional qualities consistent with the values and culture of the DAISY Foundation. Each organization follows specific criteria in selecting its honorees, and Midland Health's DAISY Committee, comprised of past recipients, established the criteria for their nominations. The selection criteria for the DAISY Lifetime Achievement honorees align with both Midland Health and the DAISY Foundation. The DAISY Committee, composed of past award recipients, carefully chose Hall based on the following criteria: a distinctive career as a nurse contributing to clinical practice, administration, education, and research, while promoting a positive image of professional nursing. Actively engages in self and peer professional development. A role model and advocate for nursing practice and its advancement as a profession. Strongly advocate for patient care improvement, enhancing the overall patient experience. Acknowledged as a transformational nursing leader by the broader nursing community. Demonstrates 25-plus years of exemplary service. Hall started as an LVN in 1995 and has flourished into one of the most influential figures at Midland Memorial Hospital, MMH. He has spearheaded numerous innovations and practice improvements, committed to enhancing quality and working environments for nurses. Additionally, Hall serves as the interim chair of the University of Texas of the Permian Basin College of Nursing, where he impacts the future of nursing. With his guidance, MMH has witnessed numerous innovations, practice enhancements, and accreditations. Driven by his desire to elevate quality and nursing work environments, Hall oversees various programs including education, patient safety, clinical data analytics, and more. Under Hall's guidance, MMH achieved dual accreditation, becoming the third organization nationwide to do so. He also led the pursuit of ANCC Pathway to Excellence designation, resulting in four designations. Hall's influence extends beyond MMH, as he had made lasting impacts on pain management and the establishment of the Total Joint Center at Midland Memorial Hospital. Quote, Dr. Hall has made a significant and lasting impact on nursing in the Permian Basin that has been disseminated and replicated across the country. Dr. Hall's innovative approach to nursing education and development makes him a true visionary in nursing. I can think of a few more deserving of this honor, end quote, said Dr. Kit Bredemus, Chief Nursing Officer for Midland Health. Alongside other annual awards, the DAISY Foundation extends gratitude to the nursing profession in over 5,500 healthcare facilities and nursing schools worldwide. To learn more, visit http://daisyfoundation.org. Midland Health takes great pride in honoring Hall for his exceptional leadership and mentorship throughout his career. Midland Health is honored to acknowledge Hall's remarkable leadership and mentorship throughout his career. This recognition is well-deserved for its profound impact on the nursing community.
Dear Abby, I recently was told that my late father-in-law was a serial child abuser who molested his daughter and at least two of his grandchildren. My husband loved and deeply respected his parents. Should I tell my husband this information? Should I ask my grown son if he was also molested as his cousins were? I don't want to rock the boat, but I want to do what is best for my son, and I'm not used to keeping things from my husband. Signed, Wish I Didn't Know. Dear Abby answers, who gave you this information and why? Was it a credible source? Were your late father-in-law's alleged crimes reported to the authorities? If you trust your source, by all means, talk to your son and ask if his grandfather ever did anything that made him uncomfortable. Why would you keep this from your husband? Tell him what you were told and by whom. Another dear Abby. My brother, Gene, passed away a few months ago. He had been in and out of the hospital for most of 2022. He had four children, and while he wasn't close to them, he tried to have a relationship with them. One child lived in the same town but wanted nothing to do with him. When they found out Gene was dying, they all wanted to know what they were getting. Gene's last wish was that they not be informed about his death. I felt I owed it to him to honor his wishes. Prior to his passing, his oldest child was saying what a horrible father he was. Now my brother is gone, and she's mad she didn't get to grieve and posting nasty things about me on social media. I won't stoop to her level and respond. Gene quit talking to all of them 4 months before his death. Was I wrong for not telling them? Dear Abby answers, No, you were not wrong. You honored your brother's wishes. It is sad that his children didn't have a chance to mend fences with their father before his passing, but they will have the rest of their lives to grieve. If you can call frustration over not inheriting anything, grieving. And another dear Abby, I'm bipolar, and my best forever friend is in her third physically abusive relationship. After he moved in with her, I told her I had to end the friendship because he also has mental health issues and carries a gun. I'm afraid for her safety. Because I survived and left my own abuser, I take my safety seriously. Another friend says I should be there for her. I did tell her police officer granddaughter about the abuse. Should I stay or should I go? Dear Abby responds, Do not allow anyone to guilt you into putting yourself into a dangerous situation. Assure your friend that once this risky romance ends, if she's still in one piece, you will be there for her. You did the right thing by alerting your friend's granddaughter that her grandmother might be in danger. The woman may need counseling so she won't continue getting into abusive relationships. You can write to Dear Abby at Abigail Van Buren, P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California 90069, or visit www.dearabby.com.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.